Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. This broadcast is in collaboration with the UConn newspaper, the Daily Campus, and UConn student-run TV station UCTV. I am your host, Kate Ariano, and I hope you are all staying warm and dry on this rainy Friday morning. I've got the news of the University of Connecticut right here from this week. President Thomas Katzelaeus announced Wednesday that UConn's student financial aid program that seeks to grant all financial needs to in-state students with families earning less than $50,000 a year will pause indefinitely due to budget deficits.
Colin Pateo with the Daily Campus
reports that the program, known as the Connecticut Commitment, is completely funded by philanthropy and private donations, costing about $700,000 this year to run. Fundraising for the program will, however, continue, and Katzelaeus said he will double his multi-year pledge to the fund. The first cohort of students benefiting from this program will continue to receive aid. Katzelaeus said, "No student who arrived this fall and who benefits from the program will lose anything. We made a promise to these students, and we will keep it." He said it was the hardest decision he has made since arriving at UConn. But he's not done yet. President Katzelaeus is back in the news, saying in an interview with the Daily Campus that he encourages students celebrating Halloween this weekend to do so, just outside. Allison Cross with the Daily Campus reports that Halloween festivities bring with them concerns about violating COVID-19 restrictions. Residence halls even plan on increasing the number of resident assistants on duty to ensure rules are being followed. Katzelaeus said he would much rather see students outside, gathering at a safe distance by Mirror Lake, then crowding into small dorm rooms. He said, "Mirror Lake is a very big space, so it can accommodate a fairly large number of people without it being a tight gathering." Former UConn president Susan Herbst is back from her sabbatical and took on a new role at UConn this semester as a professor. Mike Mavridakis reports for the Daily Campus that while Herbst enjoyed her sabbatical, doing research for her new book, she came back to the classroom to teach an upper-level political science class at the UConn-Stanford campus. Herbst said her teaching style is very collaborative and can lead to success with the help of student participation. She said, "I just tried to foster that feeling of ownership in the class so that everybody feels they're going to get as much out of it what they put into it." Mavridakis writes that in this upcoming spring semester, Herbst will teach a course focusing on American politics that will be completely remote and open to students at all campuses. For anyone interested, the class ID is POLS3246. According to Emma Guerra of the Daily Campus, Americans spend an average of 15 to 20 years of their life in front of a phone screen. Yikes. So what makes our phones so addicting? Well, Guerra reports that Adam Alter, New York Times bestselling author and NYU associate professor of marketing and psychology, might have the answer. Alter was invited to UConn to lecture about why 50% of the population is addicted to at least one tech-driven behavior. He said, "Behavioral addiction is an experience that you find so compelling that you do it over and over and over again. This, combined with the absence of stopping cues, which are signals that would tell you it's time to move on to something else, drive behaviors like binge-watching." Alter says the best way to combat these behaviors is to spend more time away from your phone, a simple trick that we could all probably benefit from. That's all we have for the news this week, so here is your weather forecast for the weekend. If you haven't seen any already, there is a chance of snow this morning until about noon, when temperatures will warm up to give us a chance of rain or snow, and some patchy fog until about 2 p.m. Today's high will be around 38 with a low tonight of 24. Tomorrow will warm up a bit for a high of 45 with some light winds and a partly cloudy evening chilling down to 31. Sunday there's a 40% chance of showers after 7 a.m., leaving the day partly sunny with a high near 56. Those potential showers will take us into a mostly cloudy evening with a low around 33. If you haven't broken out your winter jackets already, this weekend seems like the right time to do so. Now, listeners, as we move into our discussion segment of the show, please note that from this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or licensee of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. Last week on Husky Nation News, I talked to two of the candidates running for Connecticut's 2nd Congressional District House of Representatives seat. This week, I had the pleasure of speaking with the last two candidates. First up is my conversation with Libertarian candidate Dan Real about running for this seat after a few failures to win in the past. Later, I'll be talking with Green Party candidate Cassandra Martineau about why winning this election matters to her. All right, today I have with me candidate Dan Real. Dan, how are you today?
Living the dream. I'm kind of wondering where the murder hornets went. I was reasonably concerned there for a New York minute.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like things are popping up out of left field as far as 2020 goes. So the first thing I wanted to talk to you about is, why did you decide to run for this House of Representatives seat for Connecticut's 2nd Congressional District?
Well, I was originally going to run because we're in a bad spot financially. And I think, as you know, and a lot of people that are younger than baby boomers know, we're a lot worse off than we were. Inflation is really out of control. And of course, we've got this Medicare time bomb that has been accelerated to 2023. So unless we make some real, honest-to-God reforms, we're not going to fix the debt bubble that got inflated from 2009. So instead of a $100 trillion problem, it's now a $500 trillion problem. And the Fed is just completely amazed that, you know, they've increased the money supply by one-fifth this year and they're not even touching it. So we're in the late stages of... let's put it this way. It's kind of like being an alcoholic for life and then telling the doctor when you're on the operating table, like, I need to make some changes because a new liver is, I'm not on the transplant list. That's where we are.
So can you talk a little bit about, you know, the issues that you find most important? Obviously, the economy is something that you find really important and, you know, strengthening that for Connecticut. So can you talk about that and anything else that, you know, you really want to tackle if you are elected to this position?
Well, first of all, we've got one party pretending to be two, and frequently they just yell and they don't listen, and that's not nice and it doesn't get anything done. So the first thing that, you know, we need is, you know, as I describe it, is an adult in the room. And I'm that adult, and other libertarians, we actually have a libertarian in Congress right now, and he's done a lot of great work. You know, he's actually reached across the aisle to work with Democrats and Republicans. Oddly enough, I never thought I would be in the position of being a libertarian, but concerned about the sudden upheaval and removal of the social safety net that reckless policy has caused. So as to what we have to do, obviously the question I always get is, you know, are you for another round of stimulus? And my answer is not only no, but hell no, for a very obvious reason. The economy is, you know, the group of goods and services that move that we're trying to stimulate, right? I mean, so if that's what the economy is, we can't functionally say we're gaining anything if we're letting 49 other governors unconstitutionally restrain the movement of those goods and services. I mean, the bottom line is you're working against yourself in that sort of an environment. I do have a healthcare platform, which actually would reduce the cost by half. And the reason healthcare is so expensive, and I don't care what any other candidate wants to do, but unless they actually solve the problem of lack of price transparency, the cost will never go down. I mean, you essentially have, you know, several hundred different prices based on who pays and how they pay and what their term sheets are and, you know, what the charge master says. And it's entirely unworkable. Obamacare didn't fix the problem. It made it worse. And believe it or not, you actually can run a very profitable healthcare business, as the Surgery Center of Oklahoma proved, because you just go check it out yourself. Like, they'll list their prices. Nothing magically changes, you know, based on how you pay. And the prices they charge are actually a lot lower than most insurance deductibles. So the interesting thing is, these doctors, you know, don't take any insurance. And everyone's happy with the care. And if they do something that makes you worse off, like a medical error, they eat the cost. I know right now on a related note, you know, COVID-19, there's some dispute in a lot of those numbers, but COVID-19 doesn't hold a candle to medical error, which kills over 300,000 Americans every year. So it would be nice if we could flatten that curve, and my healthcare plan does that. But as far as COVID-19 goes, one of the things that we're obviously gonna have to do is we're gonna have to have a bankruptcy code amendment where anybody could discharge, you know, any debt, including and especially student loan debt. It always struck me weird that Joe Courtney can claim he's helping students when in fact, all of his proposals would do is ratify what I regard as like fraud. And what do I mean by that? I got my paralegal hat on for this. So the elements of fraud are somebody makes a representation and that representation is false and the counterparty relies on that representation and it's to his or her detriment. Now, if somebody comes up to somebody who's like 17 or 18, still in high school, they have to ask permission to go to the bathroom. And then they say, you should make this crazy financial decision, you know, to get your degree in like, say, basket weaving, you know, because if you have a degree, you'll automatically make more money, right? Even if it's basket weaving. And so what happens is somebody goes ahead and they borrow all that money on that representation. And suddenly they've got unserviceable debt that will never be paid and that cripples them. Like they don't start their life. They don't buy houses. They don't get, you know, new cars. They don't get married. They don't have kids. Or if they do, it's a hell of a lot later. And it's interesting talking to even like a lot of, you know, older members of the media. I remember a few cycles ago, I think it was the publisher or the editor of like the Bulletin, you know, and the new guy actually corrected his publisher when the publisher was like, no, they don't have rock climbing walls at schools. And the newer publisher is like, yeah, they do have rock climbing walls.
Oh, yes, they do.
Yeah, clearly these are things that are going to like make you way more employable. Like you go to your first interview and you're like, well, you know, I was in school. I got my master's degree in basket weaving because I wanted to defer my adulthood. And hey, I was really awesome at that rock climbing wall. Hire me. It never goes like that. So this is just straight up fraud. And we're doing it to, you know, each generation that it happens to. Like, Joe Courtney's proposal of you should be able to like refi a fraudulent debt, it's outright stupid. There's no other way to call it that, you know, to call it for what it is.
You know, I saw that you ran for this seat a couple times. Can you talk to me a little bit about what that was like and how, you know, through the years you developed to where you are now and why you think that now is going to be the time that you're going to be elected to this seat?
Well, I mean, you have to, it's interesting because we had ballot access is always a part of it. People look at the ticket and they go, where are your buddies at? I mean, that's one thing that holds you down.
We're going to take a quick break, but Dan and I will be right back with the rest of our interview. Stay tuned.
While listening to WHUS Stores, Yukon's Sound Alternative.
Another thing that a lot of people don't appreciate is, you know, you can be right all day. It's not going to get you elected. What generally does get you elected and the reason things kind of change is you have to like build an organization. So right now, the Libertarian Party finally this year has affiliates in all of Connecticut's counties. I mean, we finally got there. We finally, you know, we made it work. We built a lot of tools in-house. We've been organizing rallies against the lockdowns. We regularly get, you know, several hundred people out there at the very least. You know, so a lot of it was organization building. And the other thing was, I mean, even as a Libertarian, I guess I, of all people, probably should have known better. But I always say, you know, I expect the government to do the worst possible thing it can and overreact and recklessly so. But I got to tell you, 2020 was way overboard. We did a lot of things that we knew would be harmful, and we just went and did them anyway. Contrary to popular belief, there is a thing called the Math Plus Protocol, and it does manage COVID-19 successfully. But the problem is all these governors are saying, hold my beer and watch this. So you've got the Democrats basically playing the game of, are you better off than you were 2 years ago? And they're wrecking the economy to do it and making everyone suffer to do it. And then you've got the Republicans sitting by and doing nothing because they're hoping to profit from that. And that's just equally evil too. I know the president can, in fact, and has the ability, in fact, to stop this nonsense. I mean, you've basically got governors restraining, you know, travel among the states. I mean, that violates Article 1, Section 9 all day.
Can you talk to me a little bit about what sets you apart so much, besides, you know, that aspect of being the adult in the room that you've been talking about? Can you talk to me about what sets you apart from Joe Courtney, from Justin Anderson, from Cassandra Martineau, and why you think you're, you know, rising above the rest to be that adult in the room?
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, Joe Courtney has had all this time, and by the way, I was one of the 83 votes that got him initially elected because I was against the wars. And my brother was in diapers when those wars started. He's been to Afghanistan twice now. And the correct number of troops is zero. So Joe Courtney never repealed the Patriot Act. I'm sure Justin Anderson's just fine with it too. Joe Biden was all for the Patriot Act. Trump renewed the damn thing. And they're all for the spending. And what I pointed out in our first debate was, you know, all my opponents' ideas are great, but they can't pay for them. You know, so I'm the only candidate that's actually going to fit within your budget and, you know, do things that don't require a new program or don't require spending. So my approach is fundamentally different. I mean, I'm the only candidate that's out there saying, I'm not going to tell you how to live your life because I don't know how. And none of these other guys know how either. It's just the difference is I'm admitting it and I'm approaching problems a lot differently than they will. As far as Justin goes, I mean, nice guy, just like Joe Courtney is a nice guy. It just kind of strikes me like the kind of things he's saying would be great if this was like 1990, you know, because at that point, I mean, that was the kind of, you know, point where you would say, let's talk about things this way at that time. And maybe, you know, if that had happened, things would be a lot different. But now, you know, post 2009 Wall Street crash, post all of these problems, post like they've wrecked international shipping, so half the world will freeze and half the world will starve unless we get a handle on this. Post collapse of the Soviet Union, post opportunities missed to have peace, not continue NATO indefinitely. Yeah, I'm the only one that's saying, here's where we are. I'm not promising you a free everything forever. I just want you to live your own life, and I'm tired of these opportunities being taken away from you and everybody else in the district. I'm the only one that has signed an affidavit saying no more than three terms. I won't serve in more than three terms in the House. That's it.
So I want to move into a couple, you know, different kinds of questions, things that, you know, will help the people that are listening get to know you as a person better, you know, set aside from the candidate. So can you talk to me about if you have any role models in your life? That could be someone that, you know, you personally know, someone you look up to that you've never met before.
You know, it's interesting because I was never much of a role model type of guy, as in like I want to be like somebody else. But if you could take say like Thomas Jefferson and combine him with say Tony Robbins and Jordan Peterson, I mean, that would just be an awesome talent stack. That's the kind of, you know, get out there, like, you know, precise, ready to kick butt, take names. As far as me per se, I think the better question would be like, you know, who are you? I mean, I'm a doer of homework. And my background is I'm a litigation paralegal. And before that, I was an electronics lab tech. And I do have a background in electronics, so I'm part, you know, scholar, part, you know, tech guy. So, and I also make my own homemade wine too, is an interesting point. It is surprisingly easy, and I've got just a strawberry one. I think we got to bottle it pretty soon. So, other than, you know, suing the governor and trying to fight the good fight and trying to build up the Libertarian Party of Connecticut, and taking on the world, I make my own wine. So
I actually, my family makes their own wine too. So I've seen the process done, and I feel like it is easier than some people think it is.
It really is. Like, everybody has this, this kind of ties into like part of the problem we have with like scientism, for lack of a better word, or like expert worship. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, you can have all the letters next to your name that you want, or you can just get to work doing something like awesome or amazing. Like, you know, flat out, I'm not a lawyer. I've never gotten a law degree, never, you know, went that far. But one thing I can tell you in my, you know, 12, 13 years of being a paralegal is, you know, the little guy can win. And I know, what was it, 13 years ago, I actually got someone thrown out of public office by court order. It was a very interesting time. The lawyers on the other side had a really sad face. But it goes to show that, like, anybody can just, you know, do anything if you put your mind to it.
All right, so the next couple questions I have for you, just to end out our interview, are some fun things. You know, think of the answer off the top of your head real quick. And yeah, here we go. All right, what is your favorite song?
That's a tough one. I don't know. That's a tough one. I'm musically a very weird guy. I some Moby is fine, but just the same thing. I have a violin. I play admittedly poorly. You know, I like the two cellos, they're pretty good. But I also like Wheeler Walker Jr.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. And if you're chuckling, you know who he is, and I already probably know way too much about you.
Oh my goodness. All right. So what is your favorite season?
My favorite season is spring.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, because it's right after we get done tapping maple trees, which, by the way, is a whole lot of fun. And that's another thing you can do. And it's really easy. And this year, I'm going to try a maple wine.
Oh, that's so... I feel like that would have a very interesting taste to it.
It would. And it's just as interesting as dandelion wine. I just made a batch of that, too.
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to let my family know that there's, you know, there's more than just your classic red and your classic white.
Right? And it's like, hey, this guy running for Congress, I mean, he'll get you a bottle.
What would you prefer, hot chocolate or apple cider?
Oh, that's easily apple cider.
I have to agree, apple cider. Halloween or Thanksgiving?
Mm-mm. Well, that's kind of interesting, because this year is going to be different, because this year I'm doing fireworks for Halloween.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Thanksgiving's usually my favorite one, but you know, with the whole safety theater, it's mm-hmm. kind of, you know, hard. Like, I'm one of those guys that's like, listen, it's time for us to live our life and do the things that make life worth living. Mm-hmm. But you know, other people have other ideas, and they'll come around. But this year, it's gonna have to be Halloween.
Gotcha. And do you remember the last movie that you watched?
The last movie that I watched, I watch a lot of documentaries. I think one of them was, it was like about Ja Rule's Fire Festival.
Oh,
that was very
okay.
Interesting. Yeah, I like to watch, I'm a documentary guy, like, hands down. I do like really bad movies, like bad horror movies, like Plan 9 from Outer Space. Peter Jackson's first movie, believe it or not, You gotta go see it. It's called Bad Taste, and the aliens fly around, and their spaceship is a house, and mm-hmm. they pull the recliner back, it makes the house go up, and mm-hmm. they pull it down, it makes the house land, and the special effects look like a Walmart shopping bag with chunks of meat and food coloring. So the movie is great fun, and you'll never be the same, I promise you.
I'll have to add it to my watch list. Just talking to some of the candidates.
Birdemic is up there too. Birdemic was so bad it couldn't get into any film festival.
Oh goodness, I'll have to look for it. And my last question for you before you wrap all this up, is there something that you have off of your bucket list?
Off of my bucket list?
Yeah, so something on your bucket list that you want to do, you haven't done yet, anything at all. Or if you don't have a bucket list, because I don't think I really do, something that you just really want to do one day.
Skydiving was on it, but I think get elected to Congress is clearly on the bucket list, because we might actually fix a problem and people would talk to each other and shake hands and hug and say hi. And you know, I mean, we don't have to like live in this, you know, the way things are. Yeah, so that's definitely a bucket list item. Like, you know, it'd be great to like bring the troops home, you know, for like permanent, for not, you know, pretend. That's a cool bucket list item. Mm-hmm. Affordable healthcare where doctors can treat patients. What a bucket list item that would be. Yeah. I've got so many bucket list items. They're all on my website.
Yeah, I hear ya. All right, well, thank you again so much for meeting with me. It's been a pleasure, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Oh, you too. And I think I gotta go to New Hampshire for some explosives. Yeah.
Oh, so, all right. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, well, you know, I still got all fingers, so oh. I clearly know what I'm doing.
Knock on wood. All right.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Good morning, Candidate Martineau. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful this morning. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. I'm really excited to talk to you about your platform and running for the state representative seat this year.
Thanks. I'm very excited to talk about these issues.
So the first thing I wanted to ask you, why did you decide to run for the state representative seat? And is it the first time that you have?
This is the first time I've run for that role. I've been involved in politics, both as an activist pretty much all my life, starting way back in UConn with Students for Peace in the first Iraq War. This is 1990, something like that. I've done a number of political runs and assisted others in political runs as well. My concern about the Democratic Party and about both major parties is that they've really just become awash in corporate money. And this is a trend that's been going on for pretty much all my adult life. I'm 54, so, you know, since the 80s, really, with the Republicans, but with Democrats as well. Political triangulation, you know, means that Democrats are seeking out wealthier and Republican donors and kind of leaving working family and left people, you know, left-leaning people with quote-unquote nowhere else to go. This has led to an administration, you know, and a candidate, you know, you think about our presidential candidate right now who, you know, in a time of nationwide protest against police brutality is, you know, pushing, you know, more authoritarian and you know, support for the police rather than looking at alternative ways of serving communities. We have presidential candidates and many other candidates who, you know, 20 years ago when, you know, 70% of medical bankruptcies were due to medical, you know, issues in the United States, it would have been a great idea. Single payer 10 years ago when epinephrine and insulin were skyrocketing, it would have been a great idea. During a pandemic, it just seems unconscionable to me that, you know, the Democratic presidential and Joe Courtney is of his ilk are really against single payer and promising to block it. Every country does this. You know, the Office of Budget Management, you know, has shown we're going to save $450 billion and 70,000 lives a year. It's just a no-brainer. It's good for everybody except for the corporate sponsors. And my last, you know, Wall Street and Citizens United is basically just bribery legalized. And, you know, this is, if we don't have representatives who serve us, not the corporations, then, you know, what are we voting for? And I just feel it's gotten so extreme that we're just not seeing any real motion or proposals to move forward on some of the most critical issues of our time, which, you know, I believe, you know, single payer healthcare, you know, getting that fixed, Green New Deal. Climate scientists are telling us we've got like 4 or 5 years, you know, to really reverse this. We should be listening to the priorities of Sunrise Movement and other organizations, you know, have been really just pushing how dire this is, and to get, you know, Wall Street money out of Washington. I don't believe any candidate who is primarily funded by corporations will honestly be able to serve anybody but those corporations. You know, you've got laps to sit on. Green Party and myself will never take corporate or PAC donations. We're responsible to the people who vote us in and the citizens and residents of our area, you know, not the corporations. So I
wanted to ask you a little bit about the issues that you find most pressing and most important, that you would address if you were elected to this state seat in Connecticut.
You know, one of the things I think that's essential, and, you know, it's not even while elected, but I feel like it should be an important part of the election process itself, is to get the corporate money out of Washington. You know, we've seen in the last 30 years, you know, Glass-Steagall, you know, and end up fading away. So, you know, Wall Street has become more and more deregulated. We've seen this economic recoveries, quote unquote, with the stock market doing just fine and dandy while most working families are stuck at, you know, minimum wage jobs, which don't even provide enough for housing, you know, provide enough to keep people above the poverty line at this point. You know, we really need to focus on, you know, challenging income inequality. This is a quality of life issue for, you know, so many people. Especially marginalized folks. As a trans woman, I kind of know how it is to live in that and how the systems, you know, which may work well for some people, really don't work for others. So, you know, unless society is working for us rather than us working for society, I think we need to really reverse that trend. I would like to see really strong movements to get all that corporate money out of Washington. I would take it a step further, you know, in addition to eliminating Citizens United, corporate personhood is a fiction that's been with us for 120 years, 180 years from basically a crooked Supreme Court decision regarding the railroad station, you know, monopolies back in the 1880s. And it's just led to, you know, I think a lot of these quote-unquote rights for corporate people, such as equating money with speech. It isn't. If money is speech, then, you know, it's $1, one vote, not one person, one vote. And, you know, who's got access to that money and who's, you know, what do you have to do? How much do you have to compromise yourself before you even get in there? Doing other things like putting on taxes on the, you know, the quick day trading so that we can slow down Wall Street processes and make it a lot saner. Start taxing the rich. You know, that we've seen the wealthiest, the taxes on the wealthiest go lower and lower over the last 30 years, and they'll go down in the Republicans, and then the Democrats leave it there and then tell us how different they are. And, you know, you're still catering to the same clientele. And, you know, while we've got socialism for the wealthy and the corporations, you know, we've got austerity for the rest of us. And, you know, we need to reverse, I think, and again, turn all this on its head. Instead of having government, you know, work for the corporations, government should be working for us. My Green New Deal plan, I would very much like to see this using federal funds to help empower local communities. We've got some manufacturing history around Second District and around a lot of Connecticut. Some of these could be turned over to make wind turbines. You know, let's make the economy work for ways, you know, not just submarines that are going to be a few good jobs, admittedly decent jobs down in Groton, down in the shoreline, but really don't do much for the rest of 2nd District. And my other big thing that I'm trying to push is single payer now. I've seen, you know, our incumbent kind of, you know, talk about incrementally, and he likes to imply that, you know, he's using an incremental approach to bring us to single payer. But the fact is, when single payer was up for a vote, you know, he introduced his incremental approach to block and obstruct single payer. The Democratic Party and especially in Connecticut are really tied in with a lot of insurance money, with a lot of, you know, for-profit healthcare. These for-profit healthcare systems are killing us, literally. Again, 70,000 deaths a year, and that's pre-COVID. It's worked very well in all countries, you know, around the world. It will save us money. Something like 80% of Democrats, half of Republicans, and I'm not sure what the number is on independents, want this because they know it's going to, you know, increase quality of life.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, you know, some like fun details about your personality, about you as, you know, as a person instead of a candidate. So I wanted to ask, do you have a role model or an idol that you look up to in your life?
You know, the older I get, I feel the less I model myself on individuals and the more I give myself to groups. I've been very lucky, and in the last 4 years, I've got, you know, I've been in politically active and, you know, in many different roles, you know, running, speaking at, organizing, publishing rallies, lobbying, running for office, helping candidates, doing, you know, all along the line my entire life. The last 4 years, I've really tried to seek out how many different ways that I could use my voice and bring my voice to bear. And I've been lucky enough, and I found out quite a bit. You know, at town halls with Women's March on Washington, I've talked to tens of thousands of people. And, you know, I find, you know, the more active I get and the more I would like to encourage others to do, you know, I've been part of many great moments and movements, but, you know, my greatest moments are always not about me, but they're about, you know, the group and giving myself to that group, you know, such as when I went and got myself arrested for, you know, in front of immigration in Hartford, you know, a summer or two ago, because, you know, the idea of children being separated from parents and put into cages was so abominable. It was a beautiful moment for me. Couldn't have done a thing without, you know, the many groups and the supports that have it. You know, the work I've done with Black Lives Matter, you know, with so many of the other initiatives, you know, I've done part speaking for trans people and Stonewall people, et cetera. And it's always being part of the group that makes me so much more than I am just by myself. So I feel like individually we can do a lot, but we do with others and kind of, you know, surrender ourselves to a larger cause for a degree. I don't operate from despair, and I know, you know, the situation and the political extremism out there. I've been face to face with it personally, and going to continue doing that. But again, you know, when we give ourselves over as part of something larger, you know, we get to be really effective and a lot more powerful. And I would like to offer up that to others, you know, join something, be a part of something, show up, stand up, speak up everywhere you go. So I got the as I say, the three ups into the three rooms, show up, stand up, speak up, and, you know, bring it to the living room, bring it to the boardroom, bring it to the school room. You know, we've got to stand up for our issues and stand up for what's right everywhere we go. Strength and courage and, yeah, you know, community.
Absolutely. And then I've just got a few quick little questions for you that I'm going to rapid fire. and, you know, try to come up with the answer as fast as you can right off the top of your head.
All right, okay, go.
So first question is your favorite song.
Oh, probably What's Up by Four Non Blondes has been one of my favorites, absolutely. Back to the 90s.
And your favorite,
what can I say?
Your favorite season?
Oh, whichever one I'm in currently. Fall, and I love spring, you know, low insects, temperate temperatures, great running and walking days, you know, this year.
Yeah. But, and since we are in the fall season, hot chocolate or apple cider?
Warm spiced, I mull my cider. add cinnamon and honey and citrus and, you know, make a nice big pot of it, and it's great.
That sounds good.
I love my cocoa too.
And what is the last movie
matter
that you've watched?
Drinks matter.
And what is the last movie that you've watched?
Wow, ages ago. I know we just saw something on Netflix. I don't remember what. My wife and I went out to Hidden Figures probably about a year ago when that was out. So that may be the last public movie that we saw.
Yeah, I know it's definitely been a while since anyone's been able to get to the movie theater. What about Halloween or Thanksgiving?
Oh, Thanksgiving. I'm very food oriented. I start cooking 3 days before the holiday.
Oh my goodness. You do Thanksgiving right, that's for sure. And my last question for you is, can you think of something off of your bucket list?
I've canoed half of the Connecticut River from about southern Vermont all the way down to the Long Island Sound. It's taken me about 6 years and a couple of steps. So one of my big bucket lists is to finish off all of the Connecticut River within the United States.
That's incredible.
So give me a couple of years, I'll get there.
That's awesome. Well, thank you again for taking the time to talk to me. It was lovely talking to you about your platform and a little bit about you. And I wish you a wonderful weekend.
Thank you so much.
If you are interested in learning more about either candidate, you can visit danrailforcongress.com or castforcongress.rocks, but the number four, not the word. I'd like to thank both candidates once again for coming on the show today. Thank you to The Daily Campus and UCTV for collaborating with us. Thank you to Ethan Smith for our theme music. And thank you musicians MWIC and Admiral Bob for those background tunes. And thank you, listeners. I've been your host, Kate Ariano, and you are listening to WHUS Doors 91.7 FM. I hope you all have a lovely weekend.